My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
The law of country.
American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Tuesday, October 4th, 2005. And that's right, this would be Newsreel, the WOG global sit rep for core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening to this program, you are as well. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal. And currently, you can get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Osprey Radio.info, Extreme Radio, Tampa, and SRN1. And you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way that you see fit, which means that you can, you know, hand it out to people you don't know. You can talk to people about it, because talking about the show is really probably about the best way to distribute the show. We got to circulate the knowledge. Well, I've had a pretty good weekend, I got to tell you. It was good seeing Sim, and unfortunately, he's not able to be with me every day during the show. But I always think that the shows with Sumerian are much better shows. However, over the weekend, I did manage to get down and pick up an interesting book, which I thought was really, really cool. ISBN number 07867-1343-7, called The Assassination Business, A History of State-Sponsored Murder, by Richard Belfield. And I'm telling you, I'm getting through this sucker, and I'm thinking it's pretty good. It shows a very, very clean, concise view of just what exactly is employed by assassins everywhere in the world. Right from the opening line of the book, past the acknowledgments, the first sentence of the book is, assassination is the world's oldest political act. And when, you know, it could be actually argued that prostitution is the world's oldest political act. Because when you think about it, do you know how much sex is involved in politics? I mean, other than the smear campaign of, like, Clinton there getting a Hummer, realistically, sex has been a huge part of politics for a long, long time. That's why, you know, the First Lady. I don't really understand what the role of the First Lady is. Like, why is that a big deal? You know what I mean? It's like, so what? You know, the President of the United States, you know, would a single guy ever get to be President of the United States? Because clearly, I mean, if that was his only job was to be president, you know, he'd be focused. But it's always, you know, the whole candidates, they look at their whole lives, and it's such a political bullshit job. Realistically, being the president of the United States would have to be, you know, it's a job, right? It's like, you know, making burgers or whatever. I mean, it's just a job. You don't ask to see the family portrait of, you know, the manager of the company, or do you? And if you do, why does that matter? You see what I mean? It's kind of ridiculous. But getting back to the book here, this whole assassination thing, I think that that's a really interesting book to read and good to know, because you can see quite clearly how it works for an individual, it works for a massive, and you can see massive groups of people. If they were to kill hundreds of people, this is a really great way to show how the media uses spin to cover certain events, 9/11, much. So let's get into some feedback right off the top. Dear Sean, you are right about everything. That's all it said, with an exclamation point, the mighty Tassadar. Well, thank you very much, mighty Tassadar. Clearly, you're an enlightened individual. Moving right along. Dear Sean, Friday, I went to my local DMV and replaced my ID card, and the gentleman behind the counter informed me that the system is down across the country and you cannot get new ID at the moment. The word Matrix appeared with a little light bulb over my head, Looney Tunes style. Why would I need a nationwide system to get a West Virginia state identification card? Yours truly, Dubiex. Well, that's a very good question. A very good question, and well, this is all part of the new picture, right? Of course, it's obviously something Matrix-like. They leak a few ideas to the news, local news, or put it on the internet. You notice now that since we got the internet, we have television, we have radio, There's no real way to confirm what stories are true and what stories aren't. We have no single individual source, that is accountable for the news. So, realistically, how do we know The Matrix has been shot down? I mean, sure, that particular program's probably been shot down, but much like, you know, the total information awareness, I mean, it, obviously, these groups and these governmental actions are going forwards. I mean, it's only common sense, really. I mean, they don't have to tell us anything, because, after all, it all comes back to national security. Now then, moving right along. Dear Sean, I just recently watched the newest episode of Patrolling. That's right, Season 2, Episode 1 is out. It was awesome. Now, I know you're big into gaming, and I'm not sure if you still do game. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got time to game. As a matter of fact, if I was to game, I still like the idea of doing the show broadcast from a virtual location inside of a mecha on top of a hill. Now, some people say that's, you know, completely power mad and all the rest of it, but I enjoy it, and eventually, I'm going to get enough cash together and buy myself a game machine. I've decided that that's probably going to wind up being my hobby. So that way I can be like a hardcore senior citizen first-person gaming slut. I am a gamer, too. In fact, the past 2 years I've been involved with a massive second edition D&D game. I recently bought Cyber Generation, Cyberpunk's not-so-popular child at Gen Con. Interesting. Cyber Generation is basically the kids of Cyberpunks fighting against the corporations. But this time, they evolved and have cool powers. Well, that's an interesting mix. While reading through the book, I thought to myself, hey, Sean Kennedy would totally say that, which makes me assume that you get a lot of your views from RPGs. P.S. Have you ever played CyberGen? If so, what did you think of it? No, I am totally unaware of CyberGen. Never seen it, never played it, don't know anything about it, so I can't make a comment on that, Darcius. But I would say that being as, you know, from the age of about 10 to the age of about 24, I was, largely involved in role-playing games. So scenario-based strategy would be largely where I get a lot of my, a lot of my viewpoints from. You know, you roll things out. And it's interesting that the military uses tabletop wargaming and role-playing games quite often. As a matter of fact, if you look at in the Ranger Handbook, they talk about the use of role-playing games for military scenario, tabletop wargaming, running through possible scenarios, using variables and stuff like that. So role-playing games is not really, well, it's a game, of course, and it's good fun and all the rest of it, but there's quite a lot of very good uses for it. And essentially, when you consider that role-playing games are nothing but a massive game of what if, I mean, the options become very obvious to how you can use this in your everyday life. Making up your own character, running a Beyond the Supernatural campaign, or, run through the Rapture and Beyond the Supernatural, a Palladium-based system. Or, you know, do Cthulhu Now, Beyond the Supernatural, or D20, Call of Cthulhu, or whatever. You see, I mean, it's a lot of fun, and it's a great way to keep socialized, to keep with your friends, to be able to have a group that you speak with regularly. Like, it's not so good to spend a lot of time alone. That is not, I mean, it's important to be able to be alone, but it's not good to spend all your time alone just staring at the box. So that's why I enjoy paper and pen role-playing games. Dear Sean, I was watching Cops this evening, not my normal practice, mind you. I like watching Cops myself. And when I do watch, I don't watch a lot of television, but if Cops is on and I happen to be in the room, I will not run out of the room screaming as I will with, say, Friends or The Swan or some other such practice or any of these Apprentice-style shows. It just is like the latest reality TV show trend that just melts my fucking brain. I can't handle it. Especially this Martha Stewart. Apparently, her big thing is like, oh, you don't fit in. Could you imagine? Like, my God, you know, we should start a letter-writing campaign to get me on Martha Stewart's show. And I'd even give it a try. But, oh, man, could you imagine? I'm sorry, you just don't fit in. Oh, I'm sorry, too, bitch. Anyway, whatever. I was watching Cops this evening, not my normal practice, mind you, and they were in some small town somewhere in New England, I believe. Okay, so the cop gets a call, and he gets out with what in his hand? But a taser gun. So he gets out of the car with a taser gun in his hand. Now, let me just get through the email. So this guy gets out and goes upstairs to question a gentleman about what's happened. As soon as this poor son of a bitch opens his door, they forced him back, even though they had no right to, and forced him to sit on his couch with his hands in the air, aiming their laser sights at his abdomen. After they asked him a few questions, they left. They found their mark in a parked car. Before he had a chance to twitch, the three cops were juicing this poor son of a bitch. He was twitching, saying, please stop, and the usual slurred accent associated with having major voltage run through your body. They continued to juice while demanding he exit the vehicle if he could. Oh, pardon me, while... They continued to juice him while demanding he exit the vehicle as if he could. I won't go any further, but this is why cops should, if nothing else, not carry tasers as their primary sidearms. Thoughts? Well, I'll tell you. First of all, this is a pretty jaded, you know, I didn't see the episode. I don't know what's going on. And honest to God, you don't know what's going on from watching a TV show. However, the guys gets a call. They get out and they just invade his house. Now, the cops are well aware of the fact that they're just, you know, pushing this guy through his door. So they probably got a call saying that somebody was in trouble. Okay, and they have to gain entry to the house. So they push their way into the house, yeah, I'm making assumptions that the cops just didn't invade. Now, it's very unlikely the cops would just violate this guy's civil rights totally on camera, you know, I mean, because the cops are well aware that there's a camera crew there, so they probably had some kind of legal ground to go inside the house. Now, as for getting out of the car with a taser gun out, they must have, or I would assume now, that they probably are expecting violence. So I'd rather him get out of the car with a taser gun than, say, a firearm or have his pistol drawn. All right. Now, as for the dude inside of the car who they tasered the snot out of, I don't know. I don't know the rules of, like, this. Like, I get an email like this where I don't know all the factors involved. Was the guy, like, why was he being juiced? Why were the cops after him? Why did they just juice him straight off the top? There's a lot of questions here. Now, that said, clearly here, if what you're saying is completely true and it's totally uncalled for and all the rest of it, it sounds to me to be a training issue. All right, these people are getting out of their car, they're freaking out, cops are getting a little bit weathered, and so they're, you know, pulling tasers like, you know, they're Quick Draw McGraw. Now, what's the solution to this? One is a training issue. Two is I think that, you know, we need to have some kind of rotating system for police officers so that, you know, if there's a shitty area of town, like in Vancouver, it's the west side, you know, or what is it, Lower East Side or East Hastings or whatever the hell it is. But, you know, those scummy sections, every city's got them. Every city has got some scummy sections. It's always, you know, they take the rookie cops in, they drop them in the scummiest sections in the city, and then as time passes, they get transferred out of the scummy sections to go work in the more quieter areas. Now, I think this is bad. I think you should keep all cops running constant rotations in and out of scummy sections of the city. Why? So that you do not wind up with police officers who become totally hardened and cynical bastards who, you know, forget that they're there to actually enforce the law and not there to beat people down. Now, I'm well aware that cops beat people down all the time. I know that, and that's a huge problem. We got to see come up with a way to solve this. And the way we solve this is to make sure that the cops are not constantly subjected to taking out the garbage. We don't want every call to be, for every cop that goes out there, to be a completely bloodthirsty psycho call where they're dealing with meth heads. If every call you've gone, at last 100 calls you've gone on, the guy jumps out and tries to kill you with a 2x4, yeah, you're going to get pretty quick with a taser. But if you had rotating patrols where sometimes they show up and get cats out of trees or whatever the hell it is they're doing, you know, something a little bit lower threat level, it gives the cops a chance to, you know, kind of adjust and not always be on the forefront of the sharp end of the stick. Now, as well, take a look at the marriage stats for cops. They break up all the time. At least most cops have one nervous breakdown in their lives. I mean, this is the major psychological trauma here. How many fistfights have you actually had? Well, Walker probably had more than your average duck, but most people do not get into a lot of fistfights, whereas cops deal with violence day in and day off, or day out, rather. Most cops have post-traumatic stress disorder. A lot of them got it. I mean, it's not just about, you know, getting blown up in Iraq here. These guys are on the front lines. A lot of paramedics have post-traumatic stress disorder, too. But these are, you know, this silent wound that nobody talks about. It's pretty bizarre how quick we are, you know, just cops aren't, you know, things. They're people. They have problems. Sometimes they get psychological issues because of all the violence they have to deal with in day-to-day life. And that doesn't excuse a cop whipping out his taser and just going gun-happy with it. But it is an explanation on why that behavior is happening, and when we can see why that behavior is happening, we can take steps towards trying to solve that. So, moving right along, on to a sort yourself out piece, a little bit longer one here. Dear Sean, I've been listening to your show for quite a while, and have a little sort yourself out situation I wanted to throw your way. Well, here we go. It has to do with my current employment working in customer service at a call center. I'm very well educated and came out of school, but could not find a job in my industry. So a few years back, I started working at this call center. That's very common. A lot of people can't find work in the areas they're trained. That's part of the education industry. Now, let me state for the record that all my stuff is inbound, and I'm not calling someone at dinner time to interrupt their meal. Okay, that's fine. So he's, you know, like a tech support kind of thing. I've been through a couple of contracts with this company, and just like any other customer service position, there are times where you end up with a head full of snakes. But overall, my employment record has been good, and quality marks have been exceptional. The job is day in, day out, one of those usual situations. They use people to their advantage until they burn them out when they get fired or they quit. It's the same everywhere, I suppose, McDonald's, Walmart, and other places where customer service is the primary agenda. Well, it's actually, customer service should be high in every single business, but this is the big core political thing. It's a use them and lose them sort of mentality, which Home Depot, all these guys, they burn people out and drop them by the wayside. That is until last week when I started to get the feeling that something was wrong in my workplace. I couldn't put my finger on it until the old account I called, under the old account I called in the rats on the Titanic syndrome. Oh, pardon me. Sorry. Under the old account, I called it the rats on the Titanic syndrome. Today I was pulled into a meeting room where my own supervisor plus another supervisor plus one other supervisor, and was told I wasn't doing my job properly and that because of such, I was getting a written warning placed on my file. Interesting. So if I'm reading this correctly, it almost feels like they did this and will now be watching me for the rest of the year to see if I'll screw up. The second I do, fire me and do this just to save face. I wonder if that makes any sense. Well, it could be. I mean, you might be there for a while. They don't want to give you a raise anymore. It's time for you to go. They want to use and lose. They don't want to keep promoting you. So, you know, they'll ditch you. Now, I have to admit, the only reason why they're telling me these things is because someone above them is telling them these things. And we all know shit falls one way. My supervisor asked me my thoughts, and it really doesn't matter what I think, because to them, I'm just another employee number, but I said I felt like a guinea pig, and that the other supervisor in the room told me that my problem is that I must read too much George Orwell or something. This is not 1984. Well, obviously, yeah, you read. That's a big problem. I'm a guy, of course, in my 20s, but I know if I ask my family about it, they'll tell me it's my fault, and I don't know how to deal with things in the real world. Anyway, I can't see myself lasting too much longer at the job because I think they're gunning for me anyway. Hope you're not going to tell me that life sucks, so suck it up. But I'd be curious to hear your take, as always, SK. Cheers from, you know, name withheld. Now, this is your kind of an issue where you're looking at this and clearly you've been talking to people at work about George Orwell stuff. And what I would do is you got to make a decision right off the top of, do you wish to keep this job? You know, that's right off the cuff. So if you decide to quit this job, you would immediately begin looking for another job that does not suck, clearly related to the field that you are in. And it may take you a while. Now, as for the people who are pulling you in and playing little games with you, what you should do is if you have some time off, if you have time off coming to you, you know, stick some time off on a weekend, right, and take a little vacation so you get out of there for a bit, let everything cool off. Then when you come back, okay, you're a changed human being. You're a totally changed human being. You get together with the supervisor, say, could I talk with those two supervisors again? And they say, okay. So they'll set up the meeting. You walk into the room and you say, dude, you know what? You guys were totally right. You know, I gave myself a really good hard think over my time off, and I totally agree. I had the wrong attitude. And yeah, you know, sometimes a lot of the music you listen to, there's a lot going on in our society where it's really popular to be, you know, think about George Orwell and conspiracy, when obviously that is not the case. I am reborn now as a corporate whore. Oh, yeah. Tell them what they want to hear, man. Tell them what they want to hear. And then they'll be like, wow, this guy really wants to make a change. This guy really wants to toe the party line. And just after you give them these huge accolades, thanking them for pointing out your own weaknesses, you say, what can I do to make my job performance better? What can I do to make up for my bad performance? Now, meanwhile, of course, you could either be looking for your new job and all the rest of it. That way, when you leave, you wind up really hurting these people, which is always nice to, you know, give a good gash before you leave. But as well, you know, it'll kind of have them give them a feeling of they won. It doesn't matter whether or not, you know, you never stand up and say, oh, I don't agree with that bullshit. You never do that because you're not going to win. That's why they got two supervisors in the room. The two supervisors in the room can make up any story they want about what you said in the room, and the two of them will get together and do that. Now, this is how the corporate game is played. Now, if you can keep going on this fashion and play the game, it's all a big, huge, massive thunderfuck game. Yes, life sucks. So what are you going to do? You're going to suck it up, princess, and just going to soldier along? No! You want to get offensive with your subversive ideas. You want to lie to them. You want to lie to them and tell them what they want to hear. Because I guarantee you me, they are lying to you. Get covert about this. They want to play little games like this? Fair ball. Step up to the plate and play along. And that way, after you get yourself a nice supervisory position, do you think they'd give two craps about firing you on the spot? No. So find out what the actual rules are in regards to quitting and what they can do, how much money they owe you. And when you get all your cash, say, thank you, have another job, bye-bye. And leave them in a lurch. That's a good method of payback, and it's about the only method of payback which is legal. Of course, if you're in the IT department and you have access to passwords, that's a totally different thing. But anyway, on to the news. Now, I've got some after-now arcology news here, which is kind of frightening. Listen to this. An eco-friendly Japanese project that can extend the lives of aging buildings won the Bronze Award in the Asia-Pacific leg of the Holcim Foundation for Sustainable Construction. This is interesting. These are these ideas to try to help buildings, you know, stay alive just a little bit longer. The air suit, designed by Japanese architect Kanzin Doi, creates an eco-friendly envelope, around a building, increasing energy efficiency and reinforcing the building's structure, doing away with the need for more expensive infrastructure renovation. This is your arcology for the projects. A thin skin of glass and a membrane is used to envelop a building, protecting the structure from heat and water, as well as particulates, any kind of air filtration, all that good stuff. It also creates a buffer zone for the building, providing warmth in the winter through its greenhouse effect and heat insulation in the summer, kind of like storm windows. The thin, translucent facade is also reminiscent of the traditional Japanese house, said Doi, referring to the Engawa, which I guess is a traditional Japanese house. The technology was used recently to revitalize a 40-year-old building in Hiroshima, where many buildings were constructed using reinforced concrete are now beginning to show their age. As well, being nuked didn't help. The air suit could easily be adapted for other uses as well. Now, this is great for, we're putting this up to keep the buildings up. We're not worried about the ozone and stuff like that. You know, this isn't to start, you know, having completely internalized construction. And then once we get everything sealed and all the buildings sealed, then it's a matter of air licensing and things like that. Don't believe me? Well, let's get into the big arcology news and talk about Destiny USA. This is a scary, scary thing. This is just a frightening thing that is happening right now in New York. Destiny USA is the project to expand the Pyramid Company's Carousel Mall. Now, this is wild that it's actually called the Pyramid Company. Under this plan, the mall would double in size, cost $2.2 billion to create. It would make Destiny USA one of the nation's largest shopping centers. The draw of the new center would be the idea of blending shopping with entertainment. Now, this is fine. When you look at this, though, this is not about blending shopping and entertainment. This is, in fact, a complete self-sustainable, sealable environment. This is an arcology right here, Destiny USA. One problem with this plan is that the Syracuse citizens, as well as some of the general public, aren't sure about the economic implications of Destiny USA. The new mega center could have major implications, good or bad, for a large portion of central New York. The project has been a heated topic amongst many central New York residents. Many are in favor of it. Those who are in favor of Destiny New York becoming a reality cite the following arguments. So they're saying the good things about this are expanded tourism, which will bring more money to the local economy. Well, that's questionable. Well, I suppose people want to go to it. The new project will create more than 122,000 jobs. And you can bet those aren't going to be good-paying jobs. Those are going to be slave-wage jobs. It will promote the upstate region's industries, enhancing its skilled workforce and contributing to reinvigorating the local economy. I see. Which, so far, it looks like that is just a rehash of the other previous 2 points. Mike Treadwell, executive director of operation for Oswego County, says manufacturing can be attracted to this level of development because people like to have something in their backyard. So again, back to the economy. So, again, it's good for the economy, stated 4 or 5 ways. Destiny USA is expected to attract 35 million visitors annually, including 12 million out-of-state visitors and more than 2 million international tourists, which, again, talks about bringing money to the economy. So, again, it's good for the economy. Out-of-state tourists are expected to spend roughly $412 per person during a 3 to 4 day stay because they have hotels and everything like that. So, again, economy. Destiny NY will add $6.1 billion to the central New York's, you guessed it, economy, and it will generate $254 million in additional New York state tax revenue. That's what they're saying. So it's, oh, there's money coming in. However, though there are many reasons for people to be in favor, well, actually, there's not. There's one reason, which is money, and that's their reason, economy and money for Destiny USA. There are several people who are opposed to such a project, citing the following reasons. Because Destiny is so big, if something were to go wrong, it could potentially have a negative effect on five separate counties. Yes, if something were to go wrong, then it is a real problem. So, you know, that's something. Massive amounts of construction will drain the local labor pool and possibly hold up other projects. And the new shopping center may drain the business of several little mom-and-pop stores that will not be a part of Destiny, New York. Now, that's their negatives. They list like a bunch of positives, a bunch of negatives. So this is clearly some positive spin on this website. But I could see a few other problems. Like, this is the direction that America is going with their malls and things like that. It's kind of a little bit frightening to me. I don't know if I like this sort of thing. But once you go check out their website, oh my God, it's some pretty freaky stuff. Now, on to some peer-to-peer news. You know, we're still doing it for the time being. The RIA's international cohort, the IFPI, has released a piece of software that uninstalls P2P software and copyright music and video from users' computers. They're calling it a simple education tool to show people how they can enjoy music and film legally and responsibly without risking legal action by copyright holders. So run this on your computer, parents, so that, you know, we don't sue the fuck out of you. That sounds like a vaguely veiled threat that unless people delete files with the IFPI deems offensive, they're open to being sued. A quote from the chairman of the IFPI said, sounds rather ominous as well. Quote, "This is a timely initiative. It comes after months of warning and information campaigns making it clear that file swapping copyrighted music is illegal and could involve files and prosecutions." That sounds an awful lot like run our software or you're going to get sued. Of course, this really isn't anything new, as recording industry is no stranger to intimidation via lawsuit. Now, believing they have the right to determine legality of certain applications as activities isn't enough, they want to personally vet all the files on your computer as well. So, you know, if ever there was a reason to set up firewalls and make sure that nobody can, you know, seal up all the ports on your computer so the RIA can't look at you, that's why. You know, just in case you were wondering. Now, in web news, this was sent to me by Bucky Fuller. The European Union insisted Friday that governments and the private sector must share responsibility overseeing the Internet, setting the stage for a showdown with the United States on the future of Internet governance. So, of course, the U.S. wants to run everything because that's what they do. A senior U.S. official reiterated Thursday that a country wants to remain the Internet's ultimate authority, rejecting calls in a United Nations meeting in Geneva for a U.N. body to take over. EU spokesman Martin Selmayr said a new cooperation model was important because the Internet is a global resource, which clearly it is. That's what it was designed for. The EU, the European Union, is very firm on this position, he added. The Geneva talks were the last preparatory meeting before this November's World Summit on the Information Society in Tanzania. A stalemate over who should serve as the principal traffic cops for Internet routing and addressing could derail the summit, which aims to ensure a fair sharing of the Internet and benefit of the whole world. Well, clearly the United States is not going to play along with that. At issue is who would have the ultimate authority over the Internet's master directories, which tell web browsers and email programs how to direct traffic. So we're talking about top-level DNS stuff here. The U.S. is not going to surrender that. That role has historically gone to the United States. And when you can bank that this isn't going to go to their favor, so the United States is just going to run Internet 2, which has created the Internet as a Pentagon project, funded much of its early development. Well, DARPA put it out. That's true. And let's not forget that, Al Gore created the Internet, right? The U.S. Commerce Department has delegated much of that responsibility to a U.S.-based private organizations with international board members. But Commerce ultimately retains veto power. Interesting. Some countries have been frustrated that the United States and European countries that got on the Internet first gobbled up most of the available addresses required for computers to connect, leaving developing nations with a limited supply to share. They also want greater assurance that as they come to rely on the Internet for government and other services, their plans won't get derailed by some future U.S. policy. That's true. They don't want the information to stop. Policy decisions could, at a stroke, make all websites ending in a specific suffix essentially unreachable. Other decisions could affect the availability of domain names in non-English characters or ones dedicated to special interests such as pornography or anything else. I'm surprised the word terrorism wasn't dropped into this, but you can bank that the United States is not, I repeat, not going to surrender its control of the internet. No chance. It's not going to happen. So whatever they, and you can bank that that's how Internet 2 is going to be coming along to play the game. That's exactly what they're going to be doing with this. It's all about the control. Got to maintain the control. Now, in bioweapons news, and this was sent to me from Fabric, and this has been floating around for a while now, and it's pretty reputable, so I'm going to run the story. The U.S. Army's Dugway Proving Ground in Utah is looking for a subcontractor to produce anthrax, Bacillus anthracis, which is a strain of anthrax, in 1,500-liter quantities. The Stern strain is not thought to be harmful to humans, but the intended use of the anthrax remains unclear. So why does the U.S. Army want an anthrax vaccine that's not harmful to humans? Worrying that anti-biological weapons activists, that's what, well, yeah, anybody, you know, I'm not really into biological warfare. I think it's a shitty way to fight a war. But, yeah, I'd be a little concerned about all this apparent anthrax that is not affecting humans. Other recent Dugway contracts for equipment to produce unspecified biological agents in 3,000-liter batches are even more concerning to activists. Well, yeah. So it's unspecified biological agents, eh? Why would you need 3,000 liters of that stuff and batches of it? The contracts were uncovered by, you guessed it, the Sunshine Project, a great group which you need to support, a group opposed to biological weapons developed based biological weapons development based in Germany. The work involved seems to cast doubts on the ability for the U.S. to live up to its commitments to biological weapons convention. The post-9/11 anthrax attack upon the U.S. used weaponized U.S. Army anthrax, most likely to produce at Fort Detrick. A Dugway spokesperson declined to specify what the biological agents would be used for. Well, they're using it for weapons research, and it seems to me that they're not supposed to be using this kind of stuff for weapons research. So this is yet another wonderful example of how a lot of treaties and this kind of stuff is nothing more than lip service. See what I'm saying? It's like, unless we have enforcement, we're not going to be able to, you know, hold anybody accountable for anything whatsoever. And going along with bioweapons and all the rest of it, I've got some plague news for you sent in by Desert Runner. The official death toll from an outbreak of Japanese encephalitis, okay, I've never heard of this stuff, in a state of northern India has approached 1,000 on Friday. And the disease has started spilling beyond the Uttar Pradesh into other states. Well, this is interesting. 1,000 people are dying from this weird encephalitis disease. In Nepal, the deadly mosquito-borne illness, which is related to the West Nile virus, has killed at least 250 people and made 1,520 seriously ill. Now, this is a little bit more scary to me than the West Nile virus. The outbreak started in July, and since then, almost 3,400 people have been infected in one district of the Uttar Pradesh alone. Gorakhpur, according to the estimated reports, on Thursday, now this is kind of frightening, okay, $3,000 since June, so about June, July, August, September, right? We're in October now, so that's 3 months. That's like 1,000 people a month infected with this shit. That's pretty hardcore. Japanese encephalitis, J-E, is one of the, quote, most scary, end quote, diseases to contract, says Joe Lines, a vector biologist at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine in the UK. Quote, why? Because it doesn't usually kill you, but often leaves you brain damaged, end quote. Now, that's fucking evil, he told New Scientist. Quote, if there are 1,000 dead, that means there are a vast toll of encephalitis brain damaged people, end quote. Holy crap. Brain-damaging viral mosquito-borne diseases. That's great. The disease can be prevented by a vaccine, but there's been a crippling shortage in that region. India says it produces about 2 million doses a year, not nearly enough to meet its requirement. It needs vaccines, and it needs vaccines fast, stresses Lines. This is a disease you're not easily going to control with mosquito control. So you can bank that this is the perfect, this kind of a bioweapon is a cash cow. If we were to get this kind of a disease going on in America, think about how much money could be made from vaccines. If you don't get the vaccine, you're going to get a brain damaged disease. Wow. I mean, hell, that don't even make me think about it. This is because the insects that spread the disease breed in rice fields, vast areas to control. The main mosquito vector is Culex try Sinemorophosphorus, whatever the hell that is. Migratory birds, such as egrets, are a reservoir for the JE virus and carry it from place to place, infecting local birds and large vertebrates. So it's not just mosquitoes. I guess birds carry this stuff, too. JE, this particular disease, is endemic in much of Southeast Asia and does not always cause illness in people. But there's a much higher probability that the JE virus causing serious diseases in humans if it is first passed and amplified in pigs before being transmitted to humans. So it seems that this disease isn't just mosquitoes. It's birds, vertebrates, and pigs, and then it hits humans. So this is some nasty stuff. This is because of the amount of virus in pig blood is much higher than in other animals. So a mosquito is more likely to cause a serious disease if it later feeds on a human. So bites a pig, bites you, you get it. Lines notes that Culex mosquito are also present in Africa, where there are also rice fields, but no JE. That is because between Asia and Africa lies the largely Islamic Middle East, where pigs are not eaten. So because they don't eat pigs, they don't get this brain damage disease. Which, I don't know about you, but that disease sounds like some pretty scary shit to me. And even the guy at the UK is like, whoa, yeah, if they killed 1,000 people, well, that means there's a lot of brain damaged people out there, and that's some scary stuff. Way to make, you know, kind of a damaged workforce. Wouldn't it be, now think about it, if everyone in the United States, like if the entire lower class was brain damaged, wouldn't it be a great way to keep these people around, sort of like, like androids or kind of simple sort of automaton people, you know, they're all brain damaged? That's kind of frightening, I know, but is it so far removed from pharma fascism? And is this not just another method of, you know, getting everybody to sign up to get their drugs and then treatments? Oh, it's great stuff. I'd love to see, you know, what's going to happen with this, because I bank it's going to be coming to America soon. Now, in cancer news, the director of cancer research at an Arizona State University in Tempe is suing the school and in some of its senior administrators, claiming he was removed as director in retaliation for blowing the whistle on university officials for mishandling licensing contracts and patent applications for anti-cancer drugs. George Robert Bob Petit, an organic chemist known for his development of anti-cancer compounds isolated from natural sources like plants and marine animals, was the director of Cancer Research Institute, CRI, since 1975. So this guy's been in there a long time. And has held, like 30 years. And held the Dalton Chair of Cancer Research and Medical Chemistry since 1986. His lawsuit states that he has been removed from both posts. According to ASU spokesperson Kimberly Ovid, Petit is still employed as a professor at ASU, and ASU administrators will not comment on the case while it is pending. He is one of the three or four people of his generation in marine natural products that have done the most, John Butler of the National Cancer Institute in Fredericton told the scientists. He always has been very focused on getting anti-cancer drugs into the clinics. Some researchers in the field were aware that Bob was having problems with the U.S. administrators, according to Butler, but most people had only heard about disagreements over lab space. It sounded like your typical academic squabble over turf. Bob has contributed immensely to the discovery of anti-cancer compounds in marine invertebrates, terrestrial plants, and microorganisms, said David Newman of the National Cancer Institute. Besides identifying these compounds, he also isolates them and works to synthesize medical compounds chemically, said Madeline Jewell of the University of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia. He's a very versatile chemist, she added. I wasn't aware he was having these problems, and I'm sorry to hear it, Julie said. I think he's put that university on the map. So this guy is, yeah, it's an interesting sort of call, because this is, again, all about cancer. But, you know, nobody has a cure, and the guy's putting drugs on the market. And what, you know, there's a lot of drugs to treat one disease. Like, why are we having so much problem curing this disease? Petit has more than 60 patents for anti-cancer drugs, including Briostatin 1 and Dolostatin 10. In the 80s, Petit and his colleagues identified and isolated a drug called Combriostatin from the bark of the African bush willow tree, which has a Latin name I'm not going to try to pronounce. The researchers have developed several derivatives of Combriostatin that selectively damage blood vessels in the tumor microenvironment, which starves the tumor of oxygen and nutrients, according to Kevin Pinney at Baylor University in Waco, Texas. Now, this is, you know, cancer research, I think, is a massive cash cow. But if this guy's, you know, I'd like to see the nature of the lawsuit, because they talk about everything this guy's done, but they haven't actually talked about his research, so you can't really make a call on that. But it's interesting to see how much cancer research and how much funding goes into cancer research, all the while producing not much in the way of results. Now, in domestic intelligence news, and this was sent to me by Nalo Sirth, very interesting article here. Pentagon intelligence operatives would be allowed to collect information from U.S. citizens without disclosing their status as government spies under legislation approved by Senate Intelligence Committee. So they could go collect information without telling people they're, you know, agents. So that means that they could pose as what? As, well, surveyors, as census takers, and you don't need to even tell them that they're actually spies. The bill would end a long-standing requirement that military intelligence officers disclose their government's ties when approaching an American citizen in the United States, a law designed to protect Americans from domestic intelligence activities by the Department of Defense. So that's why they say, are you employed by the government? And they say, well, yeah, I am. And then they go, no, thanks much. The provision is one of several sections that would roll back privacy-related protection as part of an effort to improve U.S. intelligence agencies' ability to detect and prevent domestic terrorist plots and also do whatever they want. Another provision would make it easier for the U.S. spy agencies to gain access to sensitive records on the U.S. citizens that are being held by government and generally prohibited from being disseminated under privacy laws. So this is yet more and more bills to gut our privacy laws. The changes are part of an intelligence authorization bill that calls for what officials describe as significant increasing the funding for U.S. spy agencies. The bill would shift money from satellite programs that many lawmakers considered outdated and unnecessary. Oh, yeah. You know, privacy, who needs that? Obviously, privacy is not very important at all. Actual budget numbers are classified. We don't even know how much money they're going to drop on this. But annual intelligence spending is said to exceed $40 billion. Holy crap. The authorization bill was approved by the Senate's Intelligence Committee in closed session last week, but the text of the legislation was not released to the public until Thursday when the bill was filed in the Senate. Which is nice to see that, you know, the public has the right to know. Oh, I guess they don't. They only get to know when the Senate knows. Although the bill was endorsed unanimously by committee members, two Democrats expressed concern with the privacy provisions in written comments. Wow. So they expressed concern, but it's not going to do much. Senators Carl Levin and Ron Wyden said they considered the military intelligence provision a mistake. Pentagon operatives should be required to tell United States citizens and in the United States who are not suspected of any wrongdoing that they work for the government, they wrote. They added that they, quote, intended to support changes to this authority as the legislation moves forward. So they're going to try to change that, but I don't know if they will actually be able to do it. It's kind of a bizarre, very bizarre bill, but it's just yet another step in our march towards totalitarian fascism. Now, into Catholian news. Now, this is a pretty great story. I love this. This particular story is great because I really think that, well, fungus is just brutal. I mean, I think that fungus is a really creepy plant. So anytime I can get information on some crazy fungus, it's good. Now, check this out. Apparently, what is probably the largest living organism on Earth has been discovered in the Malheur National Forest in eastern Oregon, which is a creepy area. A fungus living 3 feet underground is estimated to cover 2,200 acres. After testing samples from various locations, scientists say it is all one organism. Officially known as Amarilla ostoia, or the honey mushroom, the fungus is 3.5 miles across and would take up over 1,665 football fields. The small mushrooms visible on the ground are only the tip of the iceberg. Experts estimate that the giant mushroom is at least 2,400 years old, but it could be 7,200 years old. Now, this is the most Catholian thing ever. This thing is, God. You know, think about it, a fungus older than Jesus, this mushroom that has gone on since before man had settled inside of North America. Think of what is the chances that this thing was become sentient. Previously, The world's largest organism was another mushroom, which covered a mere 1,500 acres near Mount Adams in Washington State. So they're pretty close together. Scientists became interested in that section of forest when trees began to die. The honey mushroom used tentacles called rhizomorphs to take water and nutrients from the roots, killing the trees. The process benefits of the ecosystem. The process benefits the ecosystem by creating clearings where new plants can grow. Animals such as woodpeckers live in the dead trees. Mushrooms also recycle nutrients. Nothing is wasted. The dry climate of eastern Oregon discourages competition for new growth, leaving the space for mushrooms already established. In other research, scientists have determined that fungi are more closely related to human beings and animals than to other plants. Dun, dun, dun. Moreover, while humans and most species are divided into only two sexes, mushrooms contain over 36,000 different sexes. Now, I'd like to know a little bit more about that, because I don't really understand. I mean, there's male, right? And then there's female. So that leaves, you know, what, like 35,999,998, different sexes that, like, what do you call those other sexes? That's a very bizarre thing. Like, I don't understand that at all. But apparently, there's multiple different sexes of fungus. Strange. Good time being a fungus, I guess. And in Space News by Rogue Trooper sent me this one. Beginning from the next space expedition, Russian will deliver U.S. astronauts to the International Space Station only on a commercial basis. William MacArthur, who has just left for ISS, can stay in orbit until the American side pays for his return. Isn't that interesting? So he's up there, and you got to pay Russia to get him back down again. So they could probably demand whatever they want. Otherwise, you know, they're not going to go get him. Russia has met all the engagements on transferring NASA employees to the ISS. Formally, we do not have to return MacArthur to Earth. Russia's space agency, Roscosmos senior official Alexei Krasnov said. So he's like, fuck him. We don't have to bring him back. You got to pay us, otherwise your guy's not coming back. So essentially, they got an American astronaut hostage. After NASA grounded its shuttle fleet in July, having failed to fix a technical problem that killed seven astronauts in 2003, only Russian Soyuz spacecraft bear the responsibility for ferrying people and supplies to the $100 billion station. The snag is that trade sanctions linked to the U.S. fears that Russian technology and know-how could help Iran to develop nuclear weapons mean NASA cannot pay Roscosmos. Oh, I see how this is. So this all gets back to Iran and nuclear technology, and NASA won't pay them. U.S. lawmakers are considering lifting the ban. Nobody expects MacArthur to spin around space forever. It would be interesting if MacArthur had an accident up there and thereby getting rid of the responsibility and the millions of dollars that would have to be spent to bring him back home, don't you think? Would they be willing to kill one astronaut to solve all that? I don't know. I think they might be. It'd be interesting to see what happens there. Today's Daily Hack, we got two of them. Things to make and do, again from Rogue Trooper, like a USB turd, a single make-a-tingletron, LED floodlights, a jewel thief, some ozone, blow up Smarties, make a blazing torch, and your own smoke fluid, which is very, very cool stuff. But the really, really hot one comes from Juicius Maximus on GPF spoofing. In light of the British government's plans to use GPS as the basis for position monitoring and road use charging system, a great many people have expressed their concerns for many reasons, but mostly cost, personal liberty, and not wanting a speed monitoring device fitted to their vehicle. You can see this is going to be coming down in the United States as well very, very soon. This group is a way to publicly show that GPS-based systems aren't infallible. They are perfect for the purpose of personal navigation, but does anyone know how easy it is to fool a GPS system? Why would you want to know your real position most of the time? But what if you needed to know to be at a different location? How easy it is to fool a position monitoring system? So that means that you could take one of these GPS spoofers, say you're at this location, and then in reality, you're at a totally different location. Obviously, lots of very, very sexy applications for something like that. And that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information and news you need to stay alive. This would be a free radio broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of 71 people, 56 continuing subscribers from last month, plus 3 new subscribers, and 12 new one-time donations. Thank you so much, everyone. And if you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the Donate tab. Every little bit helps. And thanks again to everyone and their assistance in gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information and any other pertinent stories, please email them to newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the compilation album, Square Matrix Number 1. Yesterday was Square Matrix 3, today is Square Matrix 1. 3 guesses what tomorrow's is going to be. I'm going to leave you now with a really cool track, retro track, by Peter Gabriel, called The Barry Williams Show. Really enjoyed this one when I had my own TV show on the air. I used to sing this to myself. Until tomorrow, that's what servers say. End of line.
One man at the window. One girl at the bar. Saw the look of recognition when they know just who you are. Seen you on the TV. I seen you on that show. You make the people crazy, and then you let them go. Before the show, we calm them. We sympathize, we care. And the hostile folk, we keep apart till the red light says on air. Did you see our leather lovers all tied up to the chair? Did you catch those child molesters? No one else goes there. What a show! Oh, what a show! Simple, but it really isn't art. They call the studio the hospital, making money from the sick. We let people bleed themselves, there is no other trick. My lover stole my girlfriend, keep beating up my ex. I wanna kill my neighbor, my daughter's selling sex. My SM lover hurt me, my girl became a man. I love my daughter's rapist. My life's gone down the pan. What a show! Place. Well, no man is an island. No man.
There's a scene, but this display of emotion is all but drowning me. What a show. Ever seen where people say the things that they really mean? I hear my name, I hear them roar. For the one more time, I take the floor. Just one more Barry Williams show. We're gonna take you where you want to go.